You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What's up, folks? Welcome back to another edition of The Winning Drive. I am Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers. Pleased to be joined by Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel, as well as, y'all know him as the coach, Coach Bob Shipley. He was a high school coach at Burnett, Capel, Brownwood, Rotan as well. Can't forget about that. Also played college football at Abilene Christian. Also coached there on multiple occasions as well. And also can't forget that coach was also on the staff at UT. For multiple different head coaches, five different seasons. The man's a wealth of knowledge, so we are blessed to have him. Coach Bob Shipley joining us as well. What's going on, Coach? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm kind of fired up today, so watch out. That's all I
got to
say.
No, extreme heat. Yeah, yeah. Coach was fired up on the group text, man. On the group text, Coach was fired up. So
I'm fired up.
And I know he's fired up about. He's fired up about a video. Shout out to my man, Blake Monroe of the On Texas Football Family, a video that has surfaced. And now I guess you can call it, say it's going viral, of Shedeur Sanders basically taking kind of a shot. It's a shot at 6A. It's kind of a shot across the board. He's taking a shot at 6A elite athletes and 6A football programs in the state of Texas. And also those guys who came from those programs to play at the elite levels in college as well. It was a broad shot across the board at a lot of different folks, and some people have taken offense to that, including our own coach. So we're going to play that audio. We'll play that audio. We'll get a chance to play that clip, and then we'll discuss that. We'll get into that because I know that's a hot topic right now and becoming hotter as the day goes on. So we'll get into it. But CJ, first of all, how you doing, brother? I know you're tired, man. You've been hustling since early this morning.
Rod, I'll tell you what, whenever these recruiting events come down to Central Texas and specifically Austin, I'm the happiest man in the world, you know, not having to go up to Dallas or Houston to see these top prospects. It makes my life a whole lot easier. So the Elite 11 this past weekend over in Westlake, that's a couple-minute drive for me. I loved it. Obviously, we were back at practice this morning. It was a good Monday. A lot of football going on, a lot of updates we'll get into today on the Winning Drive, but, man, I'm ready to get back to it.
Yeah, we will get to all those updates, man. Like I said, we are we're really lucky to have CJ, too, because he was there. Let me ask you this first off. How long was the media window to practice this time? It was 40 minutes last time, which was probably as long as I can ever remember for a media window. How long was this one?
Yeah, we were given five periods today. I think that equates to, what, 25 minutes? So right at the end of period number five, we were headed back through the tunnels of the depths of DKR and out to the cars to film and record. So about 20, 25, 30 minutes, right in that range.
All right, you guys, get in all of your questions, get in all of your super chats. We'll answer as many of them as we can, and we'll try to get to as many questions as we can. And yes, like I said, we'll get to the Shedeur Sanders trash talk that's got Coach all hyped up. But first, let's get to some of the things that Sark actually brought up. He had a media availability after practice, talked about a number of different things. So I want to get to some of the comments that he made. But first, I want to get to CJ and pick his brain about what he saw out there at the media window and some of the guys that look good, because they did have full pads on or still underwear? Full pads?
They went full pads on Saturday. I think Coach Sarkisian wanted to make a little bit of a note when it comes to, you know, the 100-plus high school coaches that were in attendance for the Coaching Association this past week, and Sean McVay being the keynote speaker there. They were back in the shorts this afternoon or this morning, excuse me, kind of getting back to the rhythm in which they will be practicing Monday, Wednesday, Friday this week. Right now, hey, I think this team looks really good. There's a lot of athleticism out there, especially at the skill positions and on the interior, I think is really encouraging. When you look at that defensive edge position, the quickness and the athleticism that you see there is aided by a lot of length. And that's not something that Texas has had, the combination of the two of those in past years. You might have one guy that's been that kind of difference maker on the defensive edge spot. You haven't had multiple. And I think Texas right now is going to have a pretty comfortable rotation of that group right now. And it's really encouraging when you then flip over to the opposite side of the ball and you see guys like Kelvin Banks and Cam Williams and Trevor Goosby and Jaden Chapman. You know, there's really, really encouraging guys that can provide some really encouraging battles this spring in my eyes. That's going to be a really fun talking point as this spring progresses, because it's going to be the best on best versus what is essentially going to be a brand new look at that defensive edge spot, which you're expecting to be a pretty sizable strength of this defense as 2024 nears.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. When Sark was asked about the guys who had set the tone in practice, he brought up the defensive end group. He talked about Ethan Burke, Baron Sorrell, and Trey Moore. Now, he was talking about a lot of different guys. He also brought up Alfred Collins. He talked about C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue, guys who were setting the tone at practice. But I did notice that when he mentioned, you know, players specifically, the defensive end group, the edge rushers, like three of those guys made the list of players who are setting the tone. Hopefully, as you mentioned, that means things are looking up for that group. They may end up being a strength of the team. Another strength of the team, a lot of people are talking about the wide receiver room at Texas. When you go out there to practice, one of the easier things to observe, the chemistry, the continuity between quarterbacks and the wide receivers. How explosive does that group look with all the new additions to that room?
They look smooth. I think that's the number one thing I can say about this group. And, you know, you look at Isaiah Bond, you see the speed, you see the big playability, the smoothness in his routes are certainly there. And you look at Matthew Golden, I think that guy just, he just spits smooth, you know, routes out. That's all he does.
Yeah.
for back or letter term, or lack of better terms there. I mean, all he does is be smooth in the underneath routes. He catches the football in the front half of the ball every single time. Really strong hands. I think that's really encouraging at the moment. And then Amari Nyblak, just watching him glide across the field. It's fun to watch, I'll say that. So adding Ryan Wingo to this group as well, it's a lot of depth, a lot of talent at the top end when it comes to guys that have done it before, but also the young group as well with Aaron Butler, Parker Livingstone, joining DeAndre Moore, Ryan Niblett, Jonte Cook. I mean, it's a really, really stacked group. Chris Jackson probably, if it's not Kyle Flood, he's probably the happiest man in this room right now when he can come back out and kind of just play around with all these pieces at the wide receiver spot right now.
Yeah, Coach Shipley, you know a lot about wide receivers. I'll tell you that. There's no doubt about it. What are your thoughts about, and this is a discussion that we had actually on the live stream. I know you're a coach, so you'll appreciate this. Who do you think is going to end up being the best blocking wide receiver in this group? We take for granted that Jay Witt was considered by Sark to be the best blocking wide receiver in all the Big 12. And he comes to these run plays with 12 personnel, even the pony pack you're throwing out there. You need wide receivers that are going to block. Actually, A.D. Mitchell was criticized early on because that was something he wasn't necessarily motivated to do. He wasn't enthusiastic about it. What are your thoughts about the blocking of this group? We've been talking about how explosive they're going to be. Do you think the Zuber are going to be willing blockers? Because they're not necessarily bigger wide receivers. These are all small-ish guys that Sark likes. They can run, but can they block?
Yeah, well, all they got to do is keep their body between – keep themselves between the defender and the ball carrier. You know, it's not like you know, they don't hand out many pancake blocks for wide receivers. So, and really, so many of these receivers that we're counting on this year are new. I mean, you know, we certainly have a couple of guys coming back that are going to be, you know, stars for us this year in the 24 season. But, you know, I know this. I can't answer your question right now. I hadn't been at practice. I'm going to make a practice. I don't know what these new guys look like. I know this, though. blocking is about 90% want to. You know, it's just those. You'll be able to see who the team players in that who are the guys that really take their position serious, and that are team players that will give it up in terms of blocking effort for the team. And I don't know who that's going to be yet, but I do know that the ones that step up and are great blockers are certainly going to increase their playing time because, like I said, I've always said this, you know, blocking, I don't care if you're on the offensive line or you're a running back or you're a tight end or receiver. I don't care what you are. Blocking and tackling defensively, it's the same. It's about 90% want to. If I want to make that freaking tackle or if I want to make that freaking block, you know, it's all about how bad do I want to make that. And that's what I really look forward to seeing in the spring is who are those guys that step it up in the phase of their game that's not about, you know, the accolades. It's not about the catches or the touchdowns. It's about doing the things that Jordan Whittington did to help this team be successful. And I really am appreciative and thankful for guys like Jordan Whittington who set the standard for what blocking, what extra effort looks like. And it's not just blocking, you know, this Rod. It's what Jordan did on against TCU on an interception. You know, just it's just that want to contribute in any way that you can. And if it's not if it's not blocking, it's even if the play goes bad, like an interception or a fumble or something like that, who are the guys that are hustling to the ball? Hustling to make things happen, and I'm really interested to see who that's going to be, and we'll know by the end of the spring which one of these guys are serious about being a complete player. And you know as well as I do, if you want to make it in the league, you have to be able to block, or you won't last long in the league, that's for sure. And I don't think you'll play a whole lot for Sark if you're not willing to go out and lay it on the line in terms of blocking. So I don't know the answer to your question yet, but in a couple of weeks I will.
Yeah, no, you're right. It might be the separating factor, right, in this wide receiver rotation, who's going to end up getting the more of those the reps and more of the targets, right? Speaking of blocking, nobody blocks better than the offensive line. And, CJ, you got an up-close and personal look at this group. You know, when we start talking about guys off the bus, the first guys off the bus, mostly you want them offensive linemen out there because they're going to intimidate the other team. They'll show that those big humans that Sark talks about a lot. What are your thoughts about the O-line? The reports are that it is a strength. It's going to be a strength. We know depth-wise it's going to be a strength. But what are your thoughts looking at these guys now? Once again, what are your thoughts about how the offensive line looks so far early on in spring?
I mean, they look good. And they look like a group that's kind of on the older side with a lot of previous experience together should look, if that makes sense. You know, four guys returning from a year ago. Actually, a little bit of a switch-up on the offensive line. Nato Umeazulu was at that first team left guard spot this morning in place of Hayden Connor, who was actually getting second team snaps. I'm not sure if this is going to be something that we see throughout the next 3 weeks of spring football practice or if this was a one-day deal. Cole Hudson got second team, also kind of filled in with the first team unit as well at left guard as well. So those two were kind of going back and forth at left guard. Again, Hayden Connor getting snaps with the second team. We've seen Kyle Flood kind of use that cross-training method as a strength of his in years past. It's been a staple of his coaching over the last couple of years. Right now, and Jerry Hamilton has actually mentioned this a number of times, Texas feels very good about four guys at the center spot. And that's not been the case for Lord knows how long. Coach Shipley, Rod, I'm sure y'all can back me up here. It's not been the case for quite a while now. You can add Hayden Connor to that mix as well, which could give you five guys to be a potential center whenever, if something does happen to Jake Majors down the road. So right now it is more or less just the opportunity to cross-train a number of positions. Nato did get first team. Cole Hudson got first team as well. And I'm sure we could go back to Wednesday if we have media availability then and see Hayden Connor just right back in at the left guard spot by then.
Yeah, and I also saw young Brandon Baker's out there now too, and he looks pretty good, man. He's definitely he fits the bill of the big humans when he's out there, no doubt. And is he working behind Cam Williams at right tackle already?
Yeah, so he got run at the second team right tackle this weekend on Saturday. He got some more run today. Andre Kojo, Jaden Chapman in that mix as well. A little bit of a switch up between the two of them this morning. Those three are really going to start battling more for that second and third team reps. Again, for I've heard great things about Brandon Baker so far as a Longhorn. In his pass pro, which is really where he made his money in high school, strong lower body, like ferocious hands. When he gets his hands on you, you don't go very far, regardless of age or experience that you've had previously. He's had a pretty good start to his spring as an early enrollee.
Hey, Coach, how do you handle competition on the offensive line in terms of rotating those guys? I mean, you've got some experience with the O-line. It's such a group-oriented position. They work as a unit. They need to be hive-minded. How do you handle a rotation? Just the guy that looks the guy that is the best, the guy that's most efficient and works well with the group? Or are you looking at individual traits like if the guy is a strong run blocker or a pass blocker? Like, how would you as a coach kind of approach a competition at the left guard position on the O-line?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I really feel like that you look at who's doing well in the one-on-one drills, but then you also look at who works well as a team. Because the offensive line, you don't see it when you're watching the game on TV or in the stands. You have no idea what's going on. I cut my teeth being an offensive line coach. I love coaching those guys. But I feel like that you may have a guy that is an outstanding one-on-one pass blocker, but he doesn't work well within – he just doesn't work well within the group, you know. Offensive line, they're communicating the whole time. You know, you'll see the center. You'll see Jake or whoever the center has come to the line and, you know, and get the protection right. But even when the ball is snapped, those guys are talking. You know, they're talking. And so it's one thing to be great at one-on-one, but it's also very important for you to translate that into how well you work as a team. Because you know, we used to have a pass protection. I used to call you two. It's really a very complex scheme. I'm going to lay it on you. Here it is. You two got them two. Okay. One of them's a defensive lineman. One of them's a linebacker. You two have those two. Okay. So you block the guy on the line of scrimmage, but you're looking at the second level to see who you're going to be able to pass off the defense. Who's going to pass off the defensive lineman and pick up the linebacker coming. So, like I said, real complex. You two have them two. How do those guys work in that situation? Are you a good communicator? You know, and as strange as that may seem, it's very important for those guys to have the great one-on-one skill, but also be able to communicate, pass guys off, you know, and that type of thing. And so we'll see how that goes, but typically, you know, the atmosphere, the culture of the offensive line is a microcosm of the team, you know? And so I think that, you know, through those drills, and then to your point, Rod, you move those guys around, you know, you see who can fit in. You probably the coach Flood probably has a good idea who his top five and six guys are, but you never. I mean, you're one play away from having, you know, a whole another look up front. And so, who do you move into what positions? Who? Okay, so this guy, for example, John Doe over here, whatever is our backup right guard.
Yeah.
Okay. Or left guard or whatever, but. I have another guy that's a backup tackle that might be better as, you know, a guard than the guy that I may have penciled in. So just because a guy may be penciled in as a backup doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be the guy. You work those guys in multiple positions. And I love Sark and the staff and the way they're doing that, because we've seen it with the, you know, with the wide receivers playing multiple positions, defensive backs playing multiple positions. Offensive linemen have to do the same thing, and it's not the same to be a center as it is a tackle. Mm-hmm. It's probably a little bit easier for a center and a guard to kind of swap out, but a tackle, most of the time, you're on an island by yourself. You don't have any help, you know? So it's easy for center and guard to kind of interchange a little bit, because they're doing all the talking with each other anyway. Tackles many times are on an island. So I think Flood will just take a look and, you know, in a couple of weeks, he'll have a pretty good grasp of who he can interchange where. And like I said, you have to always be ready and have a plan for injuries at every single position. And so I think that's probably what he's doing now, just moving some guys around. Just because a guy didn't start in practice this morning doesn't mean that he's not, you know, going to be a starter come spring game or even the fall. They're just taking a look at different people. I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock in, you know, a guy who's been a starter, maybe that's a backup today. You know, you're just getting different looks at different guys.
Hey, Coach, because they work as a unit so much, how often would you rotate guys on the O-line?
A lot. I mean, tackles and guards can interchange. The centers and guards can interchange. It's a little bit tougher, you know, after that. You know, I don't know for sure, you know, where he's at in respect to that. But, you know, a tackle could come in and play guard a lot of years than a tackle can come in and play center, you know. And a center can go out and play guard a whole lot easier than a guard can go out and play tackle. Again, it's because that tackle is many times on an island by himself. And that's a whole different beast than it is a center and guard who both have a hand on a guy. They're, you know, like I said, you two have those two. So, you know, we're going to kind of double this nose or this one, but we're looking, you know, at second level. And so there's much more teamwork going on with those inside three guys than there is on the outside, on the edge.
Yeah, no, good stuff there, Coach. All right, I want to, since we're talking about, obviously, the offensive line, who the offensive line is blocking for, they'll be blocking for Quinn Ewers, blocking for the running backs. We'll get to the running backs here in a second, but CJ, you've got a chance to see the quarterbacks and there's a lot of talk, obviously, about quarterback progression so far this year. Quinn taking the leap. You're going to see officially Arch Manning as the backup. How did the quarterbacks look to you?
Yeah, they look smooth. They look confident. And Sarkisian mentioned that in his press conference this morning as well. You know, these two guys, Arch Manning, Quinn Ewers, whenever you see them throw the ball, it's a good, healthy competition between the two of them to kind of put the ball in the better place each route that they get. And I think that while we haven't heard that, you know, publicly from either of them or Sarkisian, I think you can kind of feel that whenever you watch them. You know, if one's throwing solo to a side and the other's watching, they know, you know, deep down where that ball is going, where it should be, and if it's delivered in the right place. And that's what you want from your quarterbacks, right? You want them to push one another in a healthy way. And I think that's what you have right now with the two of them really kind of seeing where he's kind of pushing the envelope in these routes on air situations that we've been able to watch. The ball is not hitting the ground very often. And that is a significant change from where we were during Sark's first year, whenever we were able to come watch routes on air and kind of see these early, you know, period drills that these guys have with the wide receivers. While they haven't had a lot of time with them to throw on the field, again, that ball's not hitting the ground too often. And I think that's a big, big encouraging factor when you talk about just the big picture of what this offense can be after losing what would be five guys that had receptions to the NFL from a year ago.
Yeah, after practice, Sark actually spoke about the progression of the QBs. Matthew, can you have this clip ready to go for us, please? Sark was asked about, obviously, the progression of Quinn, but the progression of Arch as well. Here is Steve Sarkisian after practice talking about his quarterbacks.
To your point, you can feel Quinn, year three Quinn. You can feel year two Arch, right, of just kind of the operation of it, the anxiety lessons kind of year to year, right, of what are we doing next? What does this feel like? What does this look like? I think naturally this year, probably as much or more than ever, for both guys, their command is going to be really important. It's not just what they know. It's not just their ability to function. It's making sure the guys around them are in the right frame of mind and have the right knowledge to perform with them. Because you can't rely on the experience of some of the guys that we had a year ago. And so that's the challenge, right? How far can we push a Jonte Cook, a DeAndre Moore, all these new faces, a Ryan Niblets and the new faces to be elite players? And because the better they are around the quarterback, the better the quarterback is, right? And so how can the quarterback help those guys, you know, play to the best of their abilities. And so I think that's the challenge for Quinn and Arch of what does that look like? How do I make sure those guys are on point to do what they need to do to play to the best of their ability? But they're both doing a really nice job. They're both in a phase that you could see of in their progression kind of systematically, but also maturity of just players that have been in the program.
Yeah, I love that term, Coach, command of the offense. What is that? I mean, I know it entails a lot when the coaches, because they use that term a lot, man, he has command of the offense now. What is it for a quarterback to have command of the offense?
Well, he knows where the ball is going to go. He knows the objective. He knows read number one, read number two, read number three, safety valve, whatever. The thing that's really, I think, healthy about this is we're not talking about anymore is Arch going to beat out Quinn? You know, is Arch going to be ready if Quinn goes down or when Quinn graduates? That's the talk. But, you know, it's really kind of, it's not that uncommon for a quarterback to have to come in for an injury or whatever. So I think it's a very healthy situation where Arch is watching Quinn. Quinn is watching Arch. We have a clear-cut starter. We know who that guy's going to be. He may be the top draft pick, you know, in the quarterbacks, you know, come the 25 draft. But I think it's healthy because Arch doesn't have that pressure. I got to beat out Quinn. I got to beat out Quinn. Quinn's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I'm not saying Arch. I just don't think we have a quarterback battle. I think we have a clear number one. Arch is just preparing himself for the time when it's his team. And so he has the luxury of watching Quinn, not necessarily competing against Quinn. And I think that changes the whole dynamics of that quarterback room. He's not really competing for a starting job. He's watching Quinn. He's learning Quinn. Quinn has good command of the offense. Arch is trying to get good command of the offense when he does get his chance. And I think it's just like CJ was talking about, you know, knowing your reads, knowing where you're going to go with the ball. There's not many balls hitting the ground. It's just, you know, talking after every play. And trust me, those guys are in there with the quarterback coach at the end of practice, watching that film, and they're developing their command of the offense. And to me, the command is knowing what to audible out of, knowing what to audible into, knowing your reads, knowing your coverage, knowing the fronts, knowing the protection, all those things. It's a broad spectrum. But it has to become second nature to those guys.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. A lot in that description of command of the offense. But I even heard that Trey Owens looked more comfortable. It's just all about the reps you have in that system, with the personnel, the chemistry you have with those guys. Let's get to running backs really quickly, because it's been a lot of hype. As well, there should be about this running back group, CJ Baxter, Jaden Blue. But I'm hearing about the young guys a lot, the Christian Clarks, the Jarrett Gibsons of the world, CJ, and just the way they look. We're talking about the body and the frame of these guys looks a little bit different. They look mature beyond their years. How'd the running backs look to you? Because there's even talk on the 40 acres, and obviously Savion Redd's one of those guys too. A lot of hype, a lot of love thrown at Trey Wisner, too. Sark made sure to throw that out there that, hey, obviously CJ Baxter getting love, Jaden Blue getting love, the Jarrett Gibson, Christian Clark. He threw a Trey Wisner shout out there too. What are your thoughts about the running back room right now? Look at that. Look at them thighs on this dude, man. What is going on?
That's where I was going to start. You know, Christian Clark, for all intents and purposes, might not have been that guy with the most stars, the highest rating in this class, especially in the offensive side of the ball. But you get to watch him just kind of roam around the field, and he looks different. You know, he doesn't look like your typical freshman coming in. And, you know, we can talk about the thighs and the build and the frame that these guys possess as they come in. But watching him, you know, just receive the football in passing situations, it's just so natural. And I think that's something that's really encouraging to me. It's lazy and almost kind of selling Bijan short to compare one another, obviously, from Arizona. But you watch them move, and there's similarities there. And Bijan was obviously a very special running back. Not many running backs that we've seen in the last 10 to 15 years of college football can do the things that he does as quickly as he does. You know, he did, you know, his athleticism, his balance, his explosiveness, that was all very special. But there are little bits of Christian Clark that make me think eventually he might come close to that. And it's a lot of just that subtle movement that you don't expect. We watched him make a leaping catch last week during the media availabilities on the ball that was behind him a little bit. He made a leaping catch, caught it behind him, brought him over the shoulder, and just kept, you know, the stride just like that. Didn't slow up, didn't slow down, didn't hinder his ability to get down the field after with the ball in his hands. And that's not something that's very easy to do, especially in your first or second practice as a college athlete. So that's what gets me excited about him. And then Jarrett Gibson, again, the opposite. When you look at him, you see the upper body, you see the broad shoulders, you see the biceps, and you're thinking, oh yeah, no one's going to be tackling this guy up high at all, even with only a 5'10 frame, 5'11, whatever he might be. That's not a guy that you want to see late in a game. You know, that picture doesn't do it justice. We were kind of far up, and I was higher up in the stands, but you see him eye to eye there, Rod, and you look at him like a guy that might have to turn sideways to enter door frames. You know, he really has that type of build. And again, we talk about what Texas is looking for near the goal line. Right now, it might be saving on red this year, 240 pounds, whatever it is. In the years down the road, Jarrett Gibson, with the way that he's looking right now, I can't imagine there's going to be many guys that are being looking forward to meeting him on the goal line with the way that he's running the rock and the way that he's built at the moment.
Yeah, it's a great point, too. Also, I was actually randomly watching a clip from the Sugar Bowl this past weekend, and just seeing some of the catches by Jaden Blue. That was a really nice catch by Cedric Baxter early on in the game. Got called back for a holding. It was a play where Quinn improvised and threw it deep downfield, and Cedric Baxter caught it downfield. They called it back. Sark has always said the running back position is the most underutilized weapon in the passing game. And all the running backs that he brings in, no matter how they look, no matter how their bodies are, now I think the dimensions sometimes are a little bit different in terms of the distribution of the mass in their frame, but they all can catch. I think they can catch the rock. That's always an underrated part of all their games. And I think you can see that even with these young guys. I bet Christian Clark, Jarrett Gibson, weapons in the passing game, I bet all those guys are really, really impressive in that manner. Because I think that's what Sark wants to get. We're hearing now more of the pony package could be something that we see a lot more this upcoming season, which is two tailback sets. You're going to have two tailback sets now. You need running backs that can catch. Jaden Blue can catch. Cedric Baxter can catch. Same thing I bet is true for Christian Clark and for Jarrett Gibson, very underrated parts of their game. Then the Trey Wisner shout out. I thought that was really interesting, CJ, that Sark went out of his way when talking about guys who are setting the tone in practice. His new thing, I got to ask Coach about this too when we get a chance, the thermometer or the thermostat. All right, he's talking about him as being one of those guys that sets the tone, doesn't necessarily react to it. The Trey Wisner shout out. I don't think we've heard anything about him. He might be one of them sleepers that we could have been mentioning, CJ, because nobody definitely talked about him. That might be the first shout out from any of us that Trey Wisner's got out this offseason so far.
No, Trey had a really good Saturday scrimmage live part of practice towards the end of it whenever they were really getting into the team run situation. He's not an easy guy to bring down. He doesn't have the biggest build, and he doesn't look the most physically imposing guy that you'll find. But with the ball in his hands, and we saw this last year against Texas Tech, the last home game of the year, he just finds cracks. You know, he's kind of one of those slippery backs that has, you know, plenty of athleticism to make defenders miss whenever he's in a phone booth, basically. So a plus in the locker room. He's a guy that just lights up the room. Folks love him in the locker room. The teammates love it. He was a guy last year during the bowl prep, was up there singing, dancing, rapping on stage at the bowl practices. I mean, the players love him. He's a great locker room guy, but he'll give you 110% wherever he is. We saw that against Baylor with the big hit on special teams that made the highlight reel. This year, Texas is going to, again, rely on him heavily in that special teams unit. Last year, the names that really made some headlines in the special teams was Keaton Crawford and Keelan Robinson on the punt game. Well, you can expect to see Trey Wisner there this year, and he was there this morning with Gavin Holmes as the two gunners on punt. Trey Wisner is going to make some plays, and as a result, it's going to be tough to keep him off the field.
Yeah, no, he's one of those guys Sark gave a shout out to. Coach, what are your thoughts about Sark's new favorite coachism, the thermostat or the thermometer? First of all, what are your thoughts about it? And I know we can explain it. The thermostat sets the temperature, right? Thermometer just reacts to it, tells you what the temperature is. So he says it about players. Some players need to set the tone, others react to it. And so what are your thoughts about his coachism there? And what's your favorite coachism? Which one did you throw out there? Give me a couple Coach Shipley coachisms, man.
Okay. All right. I don't want to sound like Al Gore here. Get the internet. But I've been using that analogy for a long time. And honestly, one day back in the early 2000s, that just came to me, you know, a thermostat versus a thermometer, you know, and you like guys that they don't react to the environment. They control the environment. Hmm. And so I love it. It's something that and honestly, I don't know. Obviously, everybody comes up with something original occasionally. Maybe I heard it from somebody. I don't remember. It's been 20 something years ago, but I love that analogy. And I love guys that think about, when you think about them, you think about them control. That's what Bijan did. Bijan controlled that, you know, he controlled the environment from what he's doing. I love the fact that our running backs, okay, you know, when you think about it, Rod, who's covering the running backs?
Linebackers,
maybe safeties. If it's a safety, you got some cushion, you could put a move on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the fact that Sark is using his running backs in, he said, one of the most underutilized positions in the passing game was running backs. It's because they're usually can. I mean, you're not going to find many inside linebackers that can run with, and even outside linebackers, you know, that can run with a great running back. And so you use those guys, as Sark says, as a thermometer almost, you know, instead of a thermostat, instead of a thermometer. And now I've always thought the same thing about a quarterback that can run the ball. It's almost like playing with 12 on offense. Yeah, when you have a running back that can run, now you got an extra running back there, you know, and not that we certainly want to do that, but when you can utilize the running backs the way that we do in our passing game, now you are really setting that thermostat to a place that people are going to have to catch up. And so to do that, you've got to probably lessen the impact on the running game, because now you've got to have guys that can cover a Savion or one of these other guys out of the backfield. And now that's a whole new deal. I love the fact that he does that. And his innovation and creativity in so many ways is really exciting to me.
Yeah. Well, and that's a great point about, I mean, Sark, he wants to make run defenders pass defenders. He wants to turn linebackers or run defenders into pass defenders and make pass defenders, cornerbacks, safeties, come up and be run defenders. That's why he does a lot of those, you know, those formations, condensed sets, compressed sets, brings those DBs closer to line of scrimmage. Then they have to come force run defenders, which I can tell you as a DB, we don't like to do very often. So Sark is good about that. He's in terms of manipulating matchup advantages. He's really good about that. And he uses the running backs to do it a lot. Before we get to this Shedeur Sanders clip, the tight end position, just really quickly, I'm hearing great things, CJ, about Jordan Washington, the young tight end coming out. And I'm also hearing Amari Niblack's getting more and more love from the coaches. I don't know exactly, you know, what they're going to do at tight end, but it seems like maybe they're going to maybe expedite the development of a young Jordan Washington. Is that possible? Is that something that you could see that he ends up? And he also gave a Juan Davis shot.
He did.
Got some love today. So is it possible that, you know, maybe I'm underselling this tight end room, that maybe they're going to have more depth when you look at a Jordan Washington, a newcomer there, and a Amari Niblack, and then maybe a Juan Davis stepping up, that you could have more depth there than maybe I anticipated?
Yeah, I think so. And again, it's kind of been that emergence of Jordan Washington. I'm not sure how early you'll see him on the field. Again, it took a guy like Jatavion Sanders an entire year before he saw extended snaps for this Texas offense. It's a tough thing to do. This Texas staff puts a lot on their tight end position to get acclimated to this field. You know, that's that bridge between the running game, the passing game. Sarkisian said in the past, that's the second most important player on the field because of what they're asked to do and what they're asked to know, depending on opponent formation, their role in the offense, and the scheme. So right now, of course, Gunnar Helm's been receiving that first team group reps early on. Amari Nyblak's been filling in with the second unit. Been seeing a lot of 12 personnel with the two tight end sets as well with that first unit. You can expect to see that continue throughout the spring and into the fall. That's always been a staple of a Steve Sarkisian offense. But Jordan Washington is going to make things interesting because I think he is a little bit more advanced at the tight end spot than you would expect of him. You know, this is a guy that had a big basketball background. Probably around 215 by the time that he played most of his senior season. Well, he's listed at 240 right now. And you look at him, and you look at the lower body compared to the rest of that room, he does not look like he's been in college for about 2 months. You know, that lower body, especially when you compare him to Amari Nyblak, and they're different style of players, obviously, but his lower body is certainly more filled out than what you would see from the Alabama transfer, which gives me a lot of optimism that transition to the trenches in the college game is going to be smooth, and it's going to be something that you see him not have to wait as long to get up to speed for, because again, with his high school tape, the way that he was used there with an inline blocker or as a sniffer at times, he's used to life in the trenches, and he knows how dirty it can get at times. So that willingness that we talked about earlier with Coach, he has that nose for wanting to go hit somebody rather than getting hit and reacting like we've seen with some of those guys that used a lot of their high school days out wide and then made the move inside.
Yep, like a JT Sanders, basically. I mean, exactly. JT Sanders was out a wide receiver, and he was a skill position player and utilized like that, and then having to teach him the fundamentals of more inline tight end, having to play in the trenches. At least with Jordan Washington, he's already accustomed to that kind of life of living half your life in the slot, half your life basically as an O-lineman. You got to have a weird person as a tight end. Half the time, you got to, you know, vibe with the O-line because you're going to be blocking. The other time, you're hanging out with wide receivers because you think you're going to be running deep routes down the field.
Hey, Rob, the trench life isn't for everybody. Anytime I'm playing pickup basketball, and I'm sure you can back me up on this one. You know, guys like us, we don't go through the paint too often. You know, there's the physicalness in there for a reason. That three-point arc, I don't step inside of it. Nope. So when these guys, it's a little different, obviously, with pads on, but it's that same kind of mindset. You know, you're either used to the contact and you like it and you buy into it, or you're sitting out in the back saying, you know what, I'm good. You know, I'm good in that corner, denting the hardwood over there. I'll let everybody else do the dirty work and fight for rebounds. For Jordan Washington, he's used to it, and he's ready for it. And that's really been impressive so far.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah, I would like to say I've said this before. I think I don't know Gunnar Helms personally, but I don't. You can't just plug and play Gunner for what JT did last year. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't have the same skill set. Nope. You know, he doesn't have the frame. He doesn't have the wingspan. I don't know that he can catch the ball as well in traffic, you know, as JT did. So I really think we have to have some other guys come up, whether that's Amari, Jordan Washington, Juan Davis. We're going to see more than one for sure. I think, as we've talked about before, Gunnar Helms is serviceable, but I don't know that he is. We need future NFL draft picks at every position. I don't know that Gunnar is a guy that's going to go in the NFL and be. He might have a great. I hope he has a great long career for Texas and in the NFL, but I just don't have the same feel. I don't have the same feeling. I don't know about you guys when he's in the game as opposed to JT Sanders. You know, you don't have as quite the confidence that you had, because I don't know that his ability and just the things that he's gifted in is as complete of a tight end as JT. So I think the door is open for guys like Amari and Jordan and maybe even Juan to come in and get some playing time, and until we can figure out that, you know, that right combination.
I agree with you, Coach. It's basically fear is what my man JT Sanders would instill in opposing defenses, right? That's what you want. You want them to fear that your tight end position. And I love Gunnar, but you don't fear his skill set necessarily. You may fear Mari Niblack's skill set because of his vertical speed down the field, beating a linebacker, a young Jordan Washington, maybe because of some of the same things. So I think that is the question. Can Gunnar Helm become a tight end that demands attention by the opposing defense? Because that's what JT Sanders definitely did. So I agree with you on that, no doubt about it. And I think they can moneyball it to a certain extent because you don't have a five-tool tight end, the guy with the combination of skills that JT did. So you got a Niblack speed, maybe the blocking ability of Gunnar Helm. Maybe you go out and look at Jordan Washington as a guy that can help you supplement some of the vertical routes downfield as well. So maybe you can moneyball it. And I think have a contingency plan. Let's just say worst case scenario, the tight end position just doesn't take the step that we thought it would this season. Well, you can run more two tailback sets, more 21, more 20. We talked about how much we love the running back position. You can run, even throw out some 10 personnel to sprinkle in there, one back, zero tight ends, and throw out all those wide receivers. So there are options in case the tight end position is not necessarily the weapon that Sark would want it to be. But Sark is going to use 11 personnel. That's one back, one tight end, 50% of the time. And he usually uses 12 personnel, the second most of any other personnel grouping, which is one back, two tight ends. And I doubt this season he, changes that. I think you'll see a little bit more variety in the personnel groupings. But Sark loves tight ends, man. And as CJ mentioned, he loves them. And I think he's going to give these guys every opportunity to prove themselves and to earn his trust. All right, someone who has, I don't know if they've earned the public trust or not, but Colorado is all the talk in college football. And my man, Blake Monroe, did a great job getting this video out to the masses via social media. So Shedeur Sanders was being asked, actually, I don't actually even know the question, so I'm not even going to say exactly what the question is. This is just his response to the question. And he gets into taking kind of a shot, if you will, at 6A football in the state of Texas. I don't even know how he got there. And elite athletes from those 6A football programs who went to the highest levels in college football to also achieve. Here's the video, and everybody got a little upset about it. I'm going to give Coach the floor after this. I think Coach is probably most offended by it. He's a former coach in Texas, so he probably has probably closer to this and probably has more sensitivity to it than us. But here is Shedeur Sanders, quarterback, starting quarterback for the University of Colorado Buffaloes, talking about the difference between 6A football and private school football.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I came from a private school, so at the end of the day, I dealt with a lot of negativity, a lot of hate, a lot of everything I done dealt with already year after year. I came from a small private school. All the other kids was going big, Power 5, and they went to big 6A, Texas 6A schools and stuff. I don't see those same kids around. I don't see them excelling in their programs or whatever they're doing, so I always been against the odds, like, in different ways. And I came from a private school.
Okay, first, I love the question from Burnt Orange Horn here. We'll start getting to some of the questions and the super chats here. So who would trade Shedeur Sanders for Arch if it were at all possible? Would you make a trade, Shedeur? Is Shedeur better than any of the quarterbacks Texas has on campus right now? That is the question I have for you. Thank you, Burnt Orange Horn. We appreciate that. Is Shedeur better? You take Shedeur over Quinn or Arch?
I'm not, but I think Shedeur is a really talented prospect. I don't think he's to the level of Quinn. And I think Arch is going to be very special during his time in Austin. But, hey, Shador's got a background. He's got the history, the legacy of an NFL background. I'd like to see him win six games and make a bowl before I start thinking, maybe there's going to be a really elite talent there. But he put some good tape out last year despite, going 4-8. Let's see if he makes a jump this year.
Coach, he's considered a first round talent. Coach, give me your thoughts about it.
Well, I think Shedeur is one of the most talented football players in the country. There's no doubt. But when's the last time you heard a Texas quarterback throwing shade at, you know, I mean, when you're as great an athlete, and I'm taking nothing away from Shadur, he is one of the greatest athletes in college football at this time. He will reap his reward in the NFL if he doesn't in college football, if he's not a Heisman candidate. It's going to be difficult for them, as you know, for him to be a Heisman candidate unless they can reverse their record, you know, and have 8 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins. But I just think it just rubs me the wrong way for a lot of reasons. And again, I don't want to take anything away from Shadur. He is an incredible athlete, incredible player. But come on, man. I hate to sound like Joe Biden, but come on, man. I mean, you don't have to be throwing shade at these 6A Texas high school football players. There's plenty of them. Have we got a graphic? There's plenty of 6A high school football players in Texas that have done very, very well, have reached a level that Shadur is hoping he can reach. Come on, man. Golly, look at that.
Yeah, that list is pretty darn good if you ask me, Coach.
I coach 6A football at Coppell, Texas. I'm telling you, man, the thing that I learned about the Dallas area, the DFW area in 5 and 6A football is not only is there great coaching, I found that out first, great coaching. I won't go out and coach any of those cats. I promise you that, man. No, there's great, but great players, great players. Maybe they don't obviously have the get the media attention that Deion Sanders' son gets, but there's plenty of great players, not only in DFW area, but obviously across the state. And if you start throwing out those guys that were in high school at DFW when he was in high school at DFW, there's plenty of those guys that have made a great name for themselves. What he has to understand is that there needs to be a little bit of humility, you know, with that. But I mean, you know, I do respect the fact that he, you know, he's speaking from the heart, but I don't think he gave that much thought before he spit that out, because I'm going to tell you what, 6A, 5A, even 4A players in Texas, there's some great players here. Don't throw shade at my Texas boys now, because that brings out, that makes my blood boil, you know, when I see a guy like that. He doesn't need to do that. He's one of the best there is. He's going to be a Heisman candidate from the word go. You know, you don't got to say where are these other guys. I don't see these other guys. That's because you're focused on yourself.
Looking in the mirror. No, I'll say this. And by the way, Marlon, thank you for the super chat here. Marlon wants to keep it real. He was, even if keeping it real goes wrong, he says, Shadur as the Texas QB, we win the Natty. This is an uncomfortable truth. 27 touchdowns, 3 picks with no 5-star O lineman.
That's true.
He is, now he will be a first round pick. He is projecting to be a first round pick. Some people say he might be the second or the third quarterback taken overall, somewhere in that range. So he is a really skilled quarterback, and they did not have a lot of talent on that roster, and he did have a breakout campaign. They could not protect him, and there were a lot. I think he was sacked a lot, and he was pressured a lot. We all know that. And Deion Sanders ended up switching offensive coordinators as a result. But they had major issues around him. What are your thoughts, gentlemen? Shadur Sanders, Texas QB, we win the Natty. Man, that's a good conversation to have. CJ, your thoughts?
It's interesting. If Shadur Sanders is your quarterback against Washington this past year, you see 2 fumbles from running backs driving into the red zone? Does that still happen? The hypotheticals like this are fun, because you could say this and, you know, you'll get half the people in the world to agree with you, and the other people will look at you like you're talking out of the side of your head. Shadur has his strengths, and I think Quinn has his strengths. Red zone, I think you'd see a little bit more decisiveness from a guy like Shadur Sanders. I think he can extend plays a little bit better because of that athleticism that comes from, obviously, Deion being his father as well. With Quinn, though, you're not missing passes within 20 yards. You're not putting the ball – and I know Shadur had a really good year in terms of protecting the football as well. For Quinn, you're not seeing errant passes that result in turnovers as often. You're not seeing that self being put into a position to not score the football as in that position. For me, a quarterback, the job is very simple. Can you protect the football and can you put your offense in a position to score points? That's the two things that you can control. Can you put the drive down the field and can you put, you know, keep the ball away from the opposing defenses? Quinn does that very well. And I think he does that a little bit better right now than Shador. The numbers, the turnovers favor Shador here. But Quinn, if you look at it, total offense, scoring offense, the pieces that he had around him, it played to his advantage a little bit, and he made the most of it. So I like Quinn here, but it's very close. Shador is a very talented kid, and I think he's going to be a top five pick next year.
Very talented.
Yeah, but keep in mind that Shador, because Shador's done this a lot. He likes to grind that chip on his shoulder, and he uses the underdog mentality. Right, he's talked about how at HBCUs the skill talent is just as good as it is at the Power Five level. The difference is just in the trenches. He's talked about how TCU he was motivated against TCU because there was a football camp where they didn't pay any attention to him. I think it was Kendall Briles didn't pay him any attention. And he said he remembered that and wanted to get back at Kendall Briles and get back at TCU. And here's just another example of it, of him using that underdog mentality. He played at, you know, private school in Texas, going and comparing himself to the 6A, which is the biggest league, the biggest, the best and most elite level of competition of football in the state of Texas. So I think once again, he's an underdog and he knows that's when he's at his best. Baker Mayfield was the same way. There's some guys, they need to use that motivational currency. So any slight against them or anybody hating on them, they use that as motivation. They internalize it. He's one of those guys. And right now, think about it, guys, nobody's really hating on them. So you gotta create it yourself. Michael Jordan would do this.
I got to tip the cap real quick to Deion. If that's the reason that Shador is talking today, where's that coming from, do you think? It's Deion. Kirby Smart convinced an entire team of Georgia five stars that no one believed in them the year after they won a championship. What did you hear after the confetti's fallen? You got guys like Nolan Smith up there saying no one believed in us this year. They'd say we'd fall off. What were the preseason number one? That was Kirby Smart that sat up there and said, hey, fellas, no one believe in you this year. That's part of coaching.
Yes,
so you can knock Deion all you want for you know what he said in the past, but if he's going to have his guys, specifically his quarterback and his son, believing that folks aren't believing in them to perform on the field, I've got to tip my cap and say, hey, you're doing a good job coaching, because that's what you want your kids to believe is, hey, no one's going to buy into us. We got to buy into each other. We got to go play for each other. And that eventually loads up and you see those results on the field when you get the talent to back it up.
It's motivational psychology. Michael Jordan was doing it at his Hall of Fame speech. Still upset with that. Who is this damn coach that cut Michael Jordan from the varsity team as a friend? Who was this guy? Why don't we have this guy's name yet on social media?
People he's probably not coaching basketball anymore.
Right, exactly. But this is part. Great athletes do. Tom Brady still was doing it late in his career. Guys, they even when they hit the top of the mountain, you know, when you were using a lot of those slights, when you were using the disrespect, when you were using that as motivation and you get to the top of the mountain, well, you got to find more motivation. And sometimes you got to conjure it. You got to make it up out of nowhere. And I think a lot of that's what's going on. And CJ, you're right. That's definitely a seed being planted by Deion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's right, CJ. That's a great point. Great athletes need to have a chip on the shoulder. Look at the opposite of that. Look at our program the last 10, 15 years. There's nothing more pathetic and really nauseating than a entitled team or an entitled player, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a great point, CJ. And I'm so glad you brought that up. It makes me tip my hat to Shador and Deion for having a chip on his shoulder, because everybody needs a chip on the shoulder in order to push you to another level.
Yep.
Because I used to tell my players all the time, if you don't have a chip on your shoulder, manufacture one. Make one. Yep. I mean, make one. just look at Bobby Boucher. Bobby Boucher, what did he do? He thought about mama, what they were doing to mama or whatever. You know? And he created chip on his shoulder to motivate him to be at the top of his game. And I think that's what Shadur is doing. I'm so glad you brought that up. I think that's a great point, CJ.
One of my favorite stories whenever you talk about guys finding that self-motivation is Anthony Brown, who the Cowboys drafted a few years ago. He was picked 189 in the NFL draft a few years ago and actually got a Ruffles chip tattooed on the back of his shoulder with 189 inside the chip. I love that. It's one of my favorite stories because, again, you got to create that motivation. You know, people aren't going to come out and just tell you you're good. You got to go prove that, earn that, and show that the respect that you think you deserve is coming your way.
Hey, guys, Texas. Listen, Texas last year, they had that, right? I was like, nah, we are out to prove that we are a team that can play fourth quarter game, that we're a team that can close out opponents. We are a team that can compete for championships, that we are a team that can develop talent, right? This is a team that can win with culture, win in a variety of ways. Texas last year had that chip. This year, it's different because everybody is expecting great things from Texas. And at the same time, as Mac Brown used to always say, a lot of sugar on their back. A lot of people telling Texas how great they are and how awesome they are. And this is my problem with Cowboys. Now, we're not going to make this a Cowboys discussion, but it's not always how the Cowboys handle failure and adversity, but oftentimes how they handle success as a team. They don't handle success as well. That'll be the test for Texas this year, handling success. Sark's never had this much success as a coach. The program hadn't had success like this in what, 15, 16 years or something like that? It's been a long time since Texas had this much success. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. So we're a good discussion there. And shout out to my man Blake Monroe doing great work for the Owen Texas football family. All right. Oh, Coach, how about this? You got a super chat here. Shout out to Travis. Thank you, Travis. Travis Earls says, hey, Coach Shipley, I know you don't remember me, but it's cool seeing my old AD at BHS on Texas football hookup. Coach getting them shout outs, man.
Hey, of course I remember you, Travis, as far as you know. Hey, Travis, I just want to say this. Of all the kids I've ever coached, Travis, you were one of them, buddy.
That is a great line, Coach. That's a good one. Well done. Well done. All right, gentlemen, let's jump to some defense here. I think this question here on the porch, Sorrell, we'll get us started out in the right direction here. How's the edge room looking? I thought it was very, very revealing when Coach Sark was asked about the guys who are setting the tone at practice. He mentioned three edge defenders. Mm-hmm. He mentioned Ethan Berg. He mentioned Baron Sorrell. And he also mentioned Trey Moore as guys who are setting the tone. We talked earlier, CJ, that's a group that should be a strength this year. On the edge, and it should be not just one or two guys, it shouldn't be the frontline guys. We should be looking at depth in that role now with Colin Simmons being, you know, the fourth or the fifth guy, depending on how they want to use Justice Finkley in that edge room. That should be this season on the D line. That should be the strength instead of where it was last year in the interior.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And it's always fun. I love looking at this unit as they walk by. You talk about first dudes off the bus. It's that offensive line for the most part, right? Like you see Cam Williams, you see Kelvin Banks, you know, DJ Campbell. Not a guy you want to mess with. Texas now has some dudes at that defensive end spot that kind of have that same mantra about them, you know? Baron Sorrell has, for the second year, kind of been that guy that you look at and you say, he looks good. He looks good. Like Torrey Becton has had his hands all over him, has, you know, again, kind of sculpted that body up to about 259 pounds right now. Again, he just looks the part. My favorite thing about this unit is that they combine athleticism and speed with, you know, plus height now. Good size, good length. You've talked about Ethan Burke at what he can do with his length there. Colton Vosick, another guy that we're hoping as he continued to be healthy this spring. He is probably a tad bit twitchier than Ethan Burke and just as lengthy and long. He is the two of them at a 6A high school at Westlake. They were tremendous and they wreaked havoc on just about everybody that they played on the offensive line. So I'm hopeful to see Colton Vosick again continue his health, carry on into the fold of this spring. But Rod, you talked about, you know, the three guys, the two returning starters from a year ago and Trey Moore coming in from the portal. Those three guys have set the tone for a good reason. I mean, Ethan Burke's not the loudest guy. You're not going to see him kind of doing the rah-rah leadership kind of thing up in the front of the pack. But you will see that from Baron Sorrell and Trey Moore, specifically from the first 3 months of him being on campus, has been tremendous. He's coming at very professionally. He's one of the first guys off the bus every day. And they're being pushed by a good group of guys like Zeno Umeozulu, Billy Walton, and let's not forget that five-star Colin Simmons in the fold as well. Really talented group.
Hey, yeah. give me a busload full of Sergio Kendalls getting off that bus, baby. We haven't had that since Sergio left. We really haven't. We haven't had those specimens like that. Man, I send Sergio out to the coin toss every time. Hey, Serge, take your shirt off, man.
Dude, it was. No, you know what? Okay, I think we got a new mini draft that may be coming up here, the mini draft idea. First off the bus, the draft for the top guys who you want to be the first off the bus with this new roster. Because it does actually matter, because Sark was asked about how, if this team, getting back to your point about the defensive ends, do they still look like a Sark team? Remember last year you said this team looks like a Sark team. They run like a Sark team. They play like a Sark team. And he was asked about this year's team. Do they look and play and run like a Sark team? And he said yes, and he started going into detail about, you know, the vision for the team and really the vision for the program. I thought it was really interesting the different terms that he used in terms of describing where they were going with the roster. He started talking, he brought up length, number one. We talk about how the team looks. First thing he said was length, CJ. First thing he said, Coach, said that they're longer. The length, they're longer, which means that means when he is looking at specific skill sets, he's looking at wingspan, looking at arm length. I heard Mel Kiper say the other day, his favorite data point in evaluation of any athlete and any position in football is arm length and wingspan. He says it's his favorite. You talked about, CJ, how the Seattle Seahawks, you know, the architecture of the Legion of Boom was built on wingspan and length. And, of course, Sark being a Pete Carroll guy, he's big on length. And then he brought up speed, which we know he's bringing in more foot speed at wide receiver, but also at safety and at corner. And he brought up the size on the O-line with the big humans. And then he talked about quarterbacks. He said, we got the quarterbacks we want in place to deliver the football. And then he said, we got versatile athletes across the board. So in answering that question, he almost laid out what his vision was for rebuilding the Texas brand. Length, speed, size, QBs, versatile players. What do all those things have in common? There are things you cannot coach, things you must recruit, things you have to acquire. You can't coach speed. You can't coach size. You can't coach length. You really can't. In terms of quarterbacking, there are a lot of natural assets you got to have at quarterback to succeed at that position too. And then the versatility, I think that's something early on you can teach, but it's programmed pretty early on in athletes, that versatility. So I think Sark really does look at that length, and you can see it, CJ, getting back to your point, it's easily apparent, and it's obviously apparent at defensive end, like at DN, in the way they've rebuilt that position.
Yeah, it's funny you bring up the Seahawks. You can almost use that entire front office approach of how they see each position group and just copy paste that to what we're seeing right now at Texas. You know, the length at cornerback and safety. Obviously, Reek Woolen has been that 6'4 guy that you don't see very often, and you probably don't see you won't see another one like him in future drafts. He's 6'4 and he moves very well at the cornerback spot. Devin Witherspoon, another guy with tremendous wingspan, was drafted in the first round of last year's draft out of Illinois. Then you flip over to the wide receiver spot. You know, Tyler Lockett, kind of that frame that you see Sarkisian like. DK Metcalf, tremendous top end speed. You know, they brought in Marquise Goodwin because they like that speed. And of course, Jackson Smith and Jigba, we know what he can do and the type of wide receiver that he is. I mean, that looks and feels very similar to what we're seeing this group down at Texas do with their DB personnel and their right receivers. The only difference is I think that the Texas offensive line might have a couple pounds on the Seahawks right now when you talk about Cam Williams being added to the fold.
That's a great point.
I think that's a great point. But going back to the recruiting that we talked about last week, the great thing about recruiting at the level that we're recruiting at is you can take your top 8 or 10 guys at each position and you say, okay, which one of these guys fits what we're looking for in that position, which is the length in this position, the speed in this position. And you can start really almost micromanaging your recruits, your top recruits, because you're getting some of the top guys. You're getting a large percentage of the guys that you want. And so now you can go in and you can just even really, instead of having, you know, maybe the speed at receiver, okay, can I get speed and length? Can I get, you know, on an edge guy? Can I get size? But can I get the length and the speed and the tenacity and the self-motivation, you know, that intrinsic motivation that, you know, you could start really specifying, fine-tuning the smaller things that make a difference, that are difference makers of the elite guys.
No, that's a good point there, Coach. Yeah, and it's interesting that the guys they're bringing in now, the Ethan Burks, the Colton Vasek, Colin Simmons, you can see they do have a lot of those common traits. And they brought in Trey Moore, who doesn't really look like the rest of the group, all right? And Baron Sorrell has transformed his body. I think he's kind of an outlier, too, because he just has transformed his body each year. And now he just looks so much different physically. But in terms of what they're recruiting, Trey Moore doesn't necessarily fit that mold, but they brought him in because he's a natural pass rusher. Also, something I say you can't really teach. I think that's something that comes natural to guys who have pass rushing ability, and Trey Moore definitely has that with his BGO and with that first step that he has. Okay, Twitch. Syracuse. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, Twitch, lots of Twitch.
Twitch, yes, great point, great point. Twitch, that's a great way you describe it. Syracuse Horn has a great point here, and I think it'll lead us to our next discussion before we wrap things up. Anthony Hill, Syracuse Horn says, interesting that A. Hill was not pigeonholed into middle linebacker. Curious. CJ, you actually tweeted out a video, audio and a video of Sark in the post practice media availability discussing this. He was asked about Anthony Hill and where he's going to play. Here is, do we have this video here? Matthew, here's Steve Sarkisian talking about Anthony Hill and where he's going to end up playing on this defense.
Where he actually finds his home, we'll see. I just know that he can do multiple things, and so I'd hate to pigeonhole him into one thing. It's probably safe to say if we were playing tomorrow, he would play middle linebacker for us, but you know, we're not playing tomorrow, and so we're going to try to put the best 11 guys out there and making sure that we're putting him in position to make the plays that he can make. You know, he is definitely an impactful player in that way.
Coach on the guys that.
I think it's something we were going to bring up. Colin Simmons actually got a shout out from Michael Parsons via Twitter, which is really damn cool to be a freshman and getting a shout out from one of the best defensive players in the NFL, on the planet, if you will, in Michael Parsons. But the key to Michael Parsons' game is his versatility. He's the best hybrid defender in the NFL. You can move him around. He's a movable chess piece. I do believe Anthony Hill has that ability, and I'm glad that Sark, who has now been promoting versatility, especially in the back seven, but versatility everywhere across the board. I'm glad that, oh yeah, and here's the Michael Parsons shout out. It's time with the goat praying hands emoji. Yeah, Colin Simmons. I mean, if that don't get you excited about Colin Simmons, nothing will. Because if Michael Parsons thinks he's going to be a beast, I say he's probably going to be a hell of a player. Yep. But I digress. Getting back to it, when you start looking at the Anthony Hill situation, I think it is – to have him reach his full potential, I think it is paramount that they move him around some, whether it be on the edge, whether it be at the mic, whether that be showing off his versatility, dropping him back in coverage, blitzing him up interior gaps. I think if you're going to just put him at one spot, and I'm glad Sark is not going to do that, I think you make it easier on defenses to be able to game plan against a guy like Anthony Hill, who, especially even now, who may not necessarily be an above average or an elite run defender yet, because that takes time. As a matter of fact, Michael Parsons, weakest part of his game, run defense. Oh, he's an elite pass rusher, but he's an above average run defender. Same, I think that's the case. I think guys like Colin Simmons and even Anthony Hill may be a very similar pathway and developmental track, that they start off as elite pass rushers. What did Coach say last year? Anthony Hill, second best pass rusher on the team behind Byron Murphy. He's a true freshman. So he can do that early. He's going to be elite at that probably most of his career. But then you get back to what he needs to work on. It'll probably be him as a straight-up forced run defender. And teams are going to try to put him in that situation as much as possible. You can avoid that by moving him around, but you can only move him around if you have another linebacker there to stabilize that position. So that's really going to be the key in how versatile and how weaponized he can be in terms of his versatility.
Yeah, my fear is that Texas keeps him locked into that middle linebacker spot. And I don't think they will because, again, you know, you've seen Pete Kwiatkowski in past years go up to Dallas and hang out with Dan Quinn. And as a result, You've seen some creative ways to use guys like DeMarvion Overshown and Jalen Ford in the past. When I say my fear is that, is look at what LSU did with Harold Perkins a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, his freshman campaign, he was a guy that lit the world on fire, had 5 sacks against Arkansas, like, totally disrupted a number of games defensively, coming off the edge. Now, he's a 6'1.5", 6'2 guy. He's not the prototypical size that you want in the SEC coming off the edge, but because of his athleticism, because of how quick he is, he can make those plays. You have that same athleticism and makeup with Anthony Hill, except Anthony Hill's about 6'3.5", and he's up to 240. He can come off the edge. That's no question. We saw it last year against Alabama week 2 a number of times. With Anthony Hill, because he is a true linebacker that's played middle linebacker his entire career, that's where he's pegged to play at the next level. You expect him to be that middle of the linebacker, middle of the field guy. But if you keep him there, you take away what he does best, and that's get after the quarterback, that's coming downhill, that's blitzing and disrupting that pocket. So I want to make sure that I'm clear here. Finding that next piece right next to Anthony Hill, that linebacker spot, is just as important to me as finding your next, you know, nose tackle over the ball. Because those running lanes are gonna open up eventually. But if you can have that guy on the field next to Anthony Hill that frees him up and also bridges the gap in the passing game as well, now you're looking at a true defense that you can sit back and say, what are going to be the holes here? There aren't going to be many. And I think David Benda can be that guy, but I need to see it in the passing game before I say I'm going to have a whole lot of confidence in him. And similarly with Leonga LaFalle and guys like that, I need to know that they can run in the – or they can stop the run in that front seven and then the trenches as well.
Yep. Coach, what are your thoughts? Because I think that's what teams are going to do with Anthony Hill. They're going to try to identify where he is and make him a run defender. This is what teams literally in the NFL do with Micah Parsons. This is what the Packers did with Micah Parsons. They literally like, where is he? All right, let's run at him. Let's run at him, and then let's roll the pocket away from him, and let's run right at him and turn him into a run defender and see how he likes doing that. And honestly, elite pass rushers who are like hybrids, like Micah Parsons, don't really want to be run defenders. That's what something he's got to work on in his game. I think similarly, Harold Perkins dealt with something along those lines as well. Teams started looking for him, and when they could identify where he was consistently, they'll run right at him. What do you do if that is the situation? Are you just trying to move him around situationally to try to make sure teams can't identify where he is from down and down? Or is it just as simple as, hey, he's got to get better as a run defender in the middle of the field? So what would you do with Anthony Hill as a coach?
Well, there's no doubt he has to improve his run defense, but I would be preaching that to him every day, you know, about people are going to try to run at you. How will you respond to that? You know, but also I feel like that maybe more importantly than that is who can I line him up against with our opponents in passing situations, not necessarily, you know, certainly working on his run game skills and so forth. But instead of that, looking at how do I want to attack the offense this week? Who is the weak link in the pass blocking? Where can he make the biggest impact? Instead of playing, in other words, You call the shots more than saying, okay, they're going to call the shots. They're going to run at you. How are we going to do this? No, let's, you know, we certainly need to improve on that part of the game, but where can we best attack a defense with you? And I think it's between the guards, but I also think it's off the edge as well. So moving him around is going to really cause some offensive coordinators and some offensive line coaches to spend a lot of time game planning where he's at against certain calls. There are certain times, you know, the offensive line is going to move one way, leave the backside to a running back.
Yep.
Okay. Or the other way, leave a tight end in the block. How are we going to best try to defend against him? And so you certainly want to try to improve his run game, but at the same time, don't lose sight of what he's really good at. And I would go in and say, how, you know, what's a weak link? And you can't expose it every single time. It's a passing situation. Yeah. But on key downs, mm-hmm. you want to make sure you have him where the odds are in his favor in terms of the guy that he's going to be going against on the offense trying to block him.
Yeah, no, good stuff there, Coach. I know we're getting close to the end here, so I want to get this one last Sark clip in and discuss the secondary before we get out of here. Thank you guys for all the questions and the super chats. We appreciate you guys. So, and CJ, you were a part of this. That's how my man CJ is always working hard. But Sark was asked about the guys who are impressing him and the guys who are really out there have not really gotten a lot of publicity, but they've been really impressive in practice. And he mentions Andrew Makuba. In that group. So talking about Makuba. And then you asked him also a question about the cornerback health because Malik Muhammad had an injury, at least an injury concern earlier in practice. Turns out it was just being precautionary, so nothing to freak out about. But in answering that question, Sark gets into the depth of the cornerback position, which you want to know about. So here is Sark answering those two questions. He starts talking about Makuba, but then gets into the cornerback position overall. Here's Steve Sarkisian on the secondary.
Who I just talked to after practice, I love the way he's practicing right now, is Andrew Makuba. I think he's you feel his experience as a player. You feel him having the ability to play multiple positions. And I love the intent that which he practices with. You know, he's aggressive, he's tough, but yet he knows how to practice. He doesn't go to the ground. He knows how to do those things. And I hope he serves as a really good benchmark for some of the other guys on how to do it. I feel pretty good. You know, we're like I said, we have some pretty good versatility in the back end. You know, I know we probably label like Jade and Jalen Gilbo and Jordan Austin as stars. Mm-hmm. We're rolling those guys at multiple positions. We're rolling safeties at stars. And so we've got really good depth. You know, obviously with Brooks and Gavin Holmes, you know, kind of coming back with Manny has been helpful. But there's an influx of some young players that are getting some good opportunities right now and seeing some growth in them and what they can be with Wardell Max or, you know, Kobe Blacks, those guys. So I feel really good about the depth. We're gonna have to harness it a little bit here at some point down in August of, okay, what's this rotation going to look like when we get there? But for right now, they're all playing. They're all looking pretty good.
Love that, guys, that he's talking about playing. We're working safeties at corner, working corners at safety, nickels and stars at corner and vice versa. He's manufacturing depth with his group, but also promoting versatility. First, your thoughts, guys, on Makuba and what he brings to the table, but then on the cornerback depth there, CJ.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it on the offensive line, and we've talked about it at receiver, that positionless approach when it comes to what Texas wants to do all across the board. Now, you're getting a little taste of it at the secondary as well. You know, cross-training Jade Barron and Jalen Gilbo and Austin Jordan at outside, you also get the opportunity to bring guys down. You know, we've certainly seen Andrew Makuba over the last 2 years have time at the nickel spot. He's played back deep as well, and that frees up guys like Jelani McDonald to get on the field with Derek Williams and Michael Taft. So I like where Texas is in their secondary. I do want to know how much do they trust that their fourth and fifth cornerbacks? Because, again, we've seen it last year. Texas had four guys they really trusted at cornerback. It was Terrence Brooks, Malik Muhammad, Ryan Watts, and it was Gavin Holmes.
Yep.
Right now, I think you're at three, and you're questioning who's going to be that fourth. Is it going to be Warren Roberson, kind of the older guy in the group that hasn't seen a lot of play? He's a sophomore now. Or what about Kobe Black, Wardell Mack? Are you going to trust Jade Barron and now jump Jalen Gilbo into star? Is that going to be where you go? So that's kind of the question mark. But regardless, lots of pieces, lots of toys for this staff to play with defensively, and we'll see where they go from it. But plenty of talent. And, again, an increase of athleticism that you didn't necessarily see across the board last year is certainly encouraging.
Yeah, Coach, I feel like, almost like you were talking about with the offensive line, that with all the cross-training happening in the secondary, all the versatility, that the coaches are creating more solutions to possible problems that could be presented, whether it be injury issues or whether it be matchup issues week to week. Say a team's trying to attack them in a certain way, you can move pieces around, move Jade Barron out to corner, specifically if you trust Jalen Gilbo and what he can do at nickel. Hey, you can move Makuba to nickel if you want to, if you like the depth you have at safety. It's just, I think you have more solutions at your disposal when you have pieces you can move around and pieces that you can cross train. It's very similar to the O-line in that respect.
Yeah. Yes, it really is. And I think it's probably easier for safety to move into a nickel position than it is for corner. But there's still some versatility that's going on there. And the more we can get guys in that situation this spring, the easier it's going to be in the fall when, you know, it's not such a, you want me to do what, you know, this week, you want me, you know, like they've been there, you know, they've cross-trained, they've done that. And I think that's probably one of the most important strategies that Sark and this staff have utilized. And that is one thing that we talk about a lot, CJ and Rod, is the versatility of our players on both sides of the ball. And yeah, I think that's a difference maker that our staff brings, that it could really pay dividends for us next fall.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Totally agree with that. All right. I think we are close to the end of the festivities here, gentlemen. They go by fast because we're always having a good time. I appreciate all of the super chats and the questions from all you guys. Sorry we couldn't get to all of them, but we'll be back on Thursday, same time, same channel, around 4:15 here on the On Texas Football YouTube channel. So come on back with us. The winning championship drive, as Coach has nicknamed it. So thank you to my man Matthew behind the scenes. He is the real MVP. Thank you to CJ dropping all those nuggets. CJ, great job as always. Coach, you're a wealth of knowledge, so can't thank you enough for the wisdom that you impart on us. And thank you, Todd Lacey. Thank you for the very kind comments. And thank you to all you guys for your participation. We really appreciate it. Until next time, for my man CJ, for Coach Bob Shipley, for Matthew, and for the On Texas Football family, hook 'em.